Some of us have gotten into crippling debt thanks to the holidays.
We can't even afford to put out another podcast.
We can't even afford to put out an episode. Hey guys, welcome back. This is the Friends Like Us podcast, a podcast where we'll be deep diving into each episode of Friends. I'm Steven, and I'm here with Brayden and Leah. Today we'll be discussing the one where Nana dies twice, which is season 1, episode 8.
So Leah, go ahead and read us an IMDb description.
So Monica and Ross mourn the loss of their grandmother, and Chandler is shocked to find that people think he's gay.
We got death and homosexuality. If you're going to tackle it in a TV show, you have to tackle it in the right way.
Oh, that's true.
Such that you don't offend anyone. And I think Friends does a good job. For the time that it was filmed, I think it does a good job being very open-minded to everything.
Especially throughout the series.
Right.
Which we'll find out in later episodes.
Man, these topics, talking about gay relationships and stuff like that, it was not commonplace at the time. So they were traversing almost dangerous ground as far as people being offended and what they could and could make fun of or could and could not make fun of.
Which is something Friends does a lot, and they do it very well.
Definitely.
For their time.
The opening scene is the woman at his work coming in to set him up. Yeah, so she's basically saying, "You're not dating anybody, are you? Or you're interested in this woman?" And then, or he thinks it's a woman.
Right.
So she's like, "Do you want to date Saturday?" And he's like, "Yes." And she's like, "All right, he's funny, he's cute, he's smart,
So she's pretty ballsy.
Yeah.
Right? Because she just assumes he's gay, which if you're going to make an assumption, okay, that's step one. But also now she's so confident she's going to act on it.
I mean, she's pretty traumatized after she realizes
she tripped up.
Yeah, as anybody would be. I mean, I would never bring that up in an office situation.
Have any of you guys ever... like
slept with a man?
No, not slept with a man. No, Brayden. I mean, has anybody ever assumed that you were gay?
I don't know. They never told me if they did, but I have been hit on for sure.
Yeah.
In a past life when I worked retail, it was actually a couple that used to come in, and one of the guys used to hit on me a lot. They were really nice, super nice.
Was that the one that called you a twink?
No. That was somebody I worked with. No, it was this couple that came in all the time. And I remember his partner used to jokingly say, "He only buys stuff from you because you're cute." And then when they came in, they would just like laser lock onto me and come straight to me. And I was super awkward about it. Every time I'd see them, be like, "Oh, hey guys, it's great to see you, yeah." They're like, "How you doing?" I was like, "Well, me and my girlfriend." It's just like, okay, we get it. Like, that's the...
So you were like Chandler.
I was super awkward about it, but they were so nice.
Gotta go to Cabela's after this. Yeah, as far as that question goes, I think the same. I don't know if anybody's ever been like, "Oh, he's probably..." But I've definitely been hit on by men before.
Right.
Which I'm always flattered.
I have a fun fact.
Okay.
Actually, I'm probably going to mess up the name, but it's called Salo Building or Salo Building. So that's the building that they show, and it is officially credited on Wikipedia as the place that Chandler works.
Oh, nice.
It's 50 stories and 689 feet high, and the 23rd floor and up have a view of Central Park and the Plaza Hotel. And about 2016, they found that the rent was about $100 a square foot in that place. So, assuming that's monthly rent, just to, like, the room we're in might be 60 square feet, 80 square feet, right, times $100. I mean, this is a little room. Yeah. We're talking, like...
It's New York.
Nearly 10 grand if we wanted to rent out a space like this.
Right.
That's insane. Chandler has his first run-in, and so he brings us immediately back to the friends, and he's asking, "Is this something that you guys have seen too?" And everybody unanimously agrees, "Yeah, we all kind of thought that at first."
Which I really don't see with Chandler. You know, like, they play this up a lot. I don't think he really has any kind of quality that makes him...
I think I think they basically picked him because of his character style and his bad relationships and satirical about everything. And, like, who would be the funniest to have to deal with this situation? And they probably just picked Chandler because of how silly he is.
Yeah, it can't be
Whereas,
Joey.
Like, yeah, Joey is such a lady killer, there's no question. And Ross would be just ridiculously whiny about it. So of the three, yeah. So
I don't think they could do Ross after making his wife gay.
That's true.
That's
too.
Why they can't do Ross.
That's very true.
So I think that's why Chandler got selected as the person with the quality to have to deal with this plot point.
It's a pretty big toss up between him and Ross, who's more insecure. But like you said, with his ex-wife being a lesbian, it's kind of confusing, I guess. But so basically, they surmise that it's just a quality that Chandler has.
Mm-hmm.
They can't really put their finger on what it is necessarily, but it's just a quality. They're discussing that and determine that it's just a quality. Rachel gets a call from Paolo from Rome.
Does anybody think that's weird that they talk on the phone because they speak different languages? Are they talking?
That's a fair point.
It's gotta be shortened to the point because when she picks up the phone, she does say a little Italian.
Yeah.
So maybe she's picking up a few things here and there.
And she would have had to somehow communicate her phone number to Paolo at some point.
Phone numbers aren't hard, though. That's just numbers. Yeah, you can write that down.
I know, but
I don't think the written
numbers are really different. Fair enough.
Yeah, that plot point's kind of lame. And I guess they mentioned Paolo briefly in this show just to kind of keep his character alive.
To get Ross riled up, to remind everybody that Ross is still upset with the whole situation.
That too.
And that she's still dating him.
Before that.
It goes back to Chandler's office.
Oh, yeah. So this is where I think it's funny how they deal with it, because he's just like, oh, no, I'm not gay. But if I was gay, I would hope that you would pick someone hotter than...
Lowell.
He's willing to admit that he thinks Brian is pretty hot. So he's admitting he can at least identify an attractive man.
Yeah, and it falls in line with the way they make jokes all the way down the line in the show. Towards setting up, like, how a relationship dynamic would be. Well, I think, you know, it would be Brian and payroll, you know.
And then after that scene, it's where they're going to the funeral, and Chandler comes in, and he's like, oh, look at us. Don't we look so nice dressed up? And he's like, it's things like that, isn't it?
That's the quality.
And that's the closest that we get to the quality that it is. I love that, because I just feel like it was such a great line, and...
So, does anybody notice Chandler's scarf
at
the funeral?
Yeah, no, that was a little odd.
It's very flamboyant.
Yeah.
It's
really?
Like pink with frills on it. He's
so, they're
he's
going
so
out
paranoid
of way.
About this
it
quality.
A little paisley, like, pattern.
Yeah, he's so paranoid about this gay quality that he has, but that's a bold scarf to be wearing.
And then at the funeral, he's trying to schmooze some pretty girl at the funeral, and then Ross goes and gets drugged up and runs up and is like, hey man, if you want to be gay, be gay. And just immediately ruins that interaction for Chandler.
He's really hitting it off with this woman too. Like, it's going somewhere.
Oh,
it's painful to watch. I think that's basically it.
There's the after-credit scene where he meets Brian.
Lowell.
We see Lowell.
Lowell tells him, you don't have a quality. We can tell.
Yeah,
right?
He says, by the way, your friend Brian from payroll, he is.
He is. And you could never get Brian.
I'm just curious, like, did anybody look up, like, because he uses, like, he references the gay radar. Was that one of the first? Yeah. Is that one of the first times it's used?
It
or, like,
could
was
be.
That
you know,
being used before? I wasn't sure.
One thing I've found with Friends is their writing is very original.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
jokes that they make, I mean, this is early 90s, and it's ingrained in culture now. So it's hard to remember, but a lot of the jokes that they make were completely original.
For the fact,
the fact that
Friend Zone was coined in this show, it wouldn't surprise me if Gaydar was coined in the show.
He chases off down the hall screaming at Lowell, I could get a Brian, I could get a Brian.
And Brian walks in.
So awkward. It's probably
not
helping his reputation. But that's basically it, short and sweet with Chandler. So, let's see. So the first mention of Nana.
It's when they're eating after Chandler's had his fit about the quality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's Monica where it's where Monica gets a phone call. Mm-hmm. She's on the phone, yeah. Paolo calls, she beeps in, or Jack beeps in, and mentions that Nana is taking a turn. So they rush to the hospital.
Can I talk to you about something that has haunted me? I don't know if it's haunted me, but I always go to it when I watch this scene. And that is the chopstick utensil combo things. You can buy them. They're called fork chops. You can buy a set of six for $36 on Amazon.
Worth it.
As of when I looked this up. So not guaranteed.
Buy now.
Anyway, that's something that's always, I don't know why that's always stuck out to me.
I did notice that. I've never noticed it before. Notice that in this episode. So the next scene, we see the Gellers, or Monica and Ross, meeting up with the rest of the Gellers
at the hospital. So they've shown up to essentially be there for their Nana's impending pass away. But I would have thought that they would have been in the room until she had passed.
Yeah.
That was the weird thing to me.
That is odd.
And I wonder what the reasoning was for them to be out in the waiting room. But
they got a good waiting spot. They're literally right by the hospital door, which never happens in any hospital ever. You take two steps and you walk into Nana's room.
And you're there.
So why not be in the waiting room? You got more space out there. Breeze.
I did find it odd when they went into the room, they were saying, Monica and Ross were saying their goodbyes, and, you know, like, Nana moves. So they come running out trying to get the nurse, and the nurse comes back and it's like, okay, now she's gone.
Yeah. We're looking into it.
And the thing is,
it's one of Jack Geller's best lines.
Yes, it is. But I find it odd that who goes back into the room after Nana's moved? The grandkids. Why wouldn't the kids have gone back into the room? That seemed odd to me.
I think, and that's why I think it's because they're the main characters of the show. Those are who get sent in, but it doesn't make any sense because they're not the people who would have gone in.
Yeah, no. That's true. Jack and Judy do look a little shook, though. They're kind of shaken up that this is happening. So
I don't think
Jack
is that shaken.
What would your reaction be if someone you thought had just passed away just all of a sudden started moving? I'd probably pee my pants. I'm going to be honest with you. I'd pee my pants for sure.
I'd be a little freaked out, especially if it was someone really close to me.
Yeah.
It would definitely be terrifying. But apparently there have been studies, and this is the thing that I looked up. I was actually curious if that can actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there have been studies that prove that bodies can move after death. It
takes
a while before they actually stiffen out.
Yeah.
And stop moving. So this is an occurrence that can actually happen.
Yeah, it's very relatable to real life. I mean, most people have had this happen or will have it happen in their lifetime several times. I think it's funny that as soon as they show up, Judy insults Monica immediately. What's with your hair?
She is completely fine with bashing Monica. Which is like a third subtle plot point of the show. It's not enough to really get its own plot point, but it is kind of one of the plot points where it's Monica continuing to combat her mom being super critical of everything she does.
Yeah.
I liked Ross's reaction to that, because Monica's just like, oh my god, and Ross just says, oh, don't worry, we've got all night. Like, we haven't even discussed relationships or your career.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ross is aware of it. Yeah, that's always Ross. He's aware of it, but he just wants everybody to play nice and feel better. He doesn't really actively do anything.
He just wants to be the golden child.
Yeah, he's okay with that, too.
So
that's
why he doesn't do anything, is I'm the golden child anyway, so, you know, you're just going to have to deal with this.
That's very true. It is interesting because this plot point here is very relatable to real life. They make a lot of jokes that I feel like hit everybody's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the nagging mother. So let's put it this way, the nagging grandmother, the nagging mother, the daughter that will probably grow up. She's kind of naggy too.
Monica is 100% going to grow up to be just like her mom.
So it's showing that vicious cycle in families, which I think is also very relatable too.
Well, I don't know. I think Monica's a different kind of nagging than what her mom is like.
Yeah.
Because her mom is very directed at Monica specifically and everything that Monica does.
Mm-hmm.
And in this situation, I think maybe that comes out a little bit more often than some of the other episodes. I think some of the episodes are a little bit more subtle with Judy's nagging on her. This one's very blatant, and it could be because her mom just died and she's taking it out on Monica because that's what she's used to doing.
Right.
Which is not healthy, but...
Yeah, so moving on from that, they She dies twice. Yeah. And they start to say their final goodbyes to her.
They do. Again. And I want to say the next scene after that, there's a brief conversation amongst the friends about dealing with death and how to handle it.
Phoebe is kind of talking about how people have an essence and shit, and she's rambling on.
She's more of like a soul person. Yeah. Everybody has a soul.
Somebody's still there.
Oh, Debbie. Debbie got Debbie struck by lightning. That was pretty funny, the story she tells.
I don't know who this is. She got struck by lightning.
So then we get to go to the funeral.
No, well, before the funeral, they do start going through her shit
at the house. I want to talk about this.
It's another thing that has to happen, right?
It's not weird, but the part where, like, Ross gets in the closet, and I'm just sitting there going, how the hell did Nana get any clothes out of her closet?
Yeah.
This is so infuriating to me. I don't understand this scene.
He's a climber.
And it makes me angry, because why is there a dresser in the closet? That doesn't make any sense to put a dresser in the closet. How would Nana have gotten a dresser in the closet? How would have Nana, like Leah was saying, gotten anything out of the closet with the dresser there? She was a feeble old woman. This Poor thing bush. Makes no sense to me.
Climber. Yeah.
It was the stupidest decision in this episode, in my opinion.
I get what you're saying. To be fair, she might have had more than one closet, and that was her junk closet, kind of like Monica's junk room or whatever.
Why were they picking dresses out of the junk closet?
I mean, she's old. She probably doesn't leave the house, so she's probably got a lot of formal wear in there, hides all her sweet and lows.
I want you to imagine the pain in the butt it would have been to put a dresser in a closet. Because there's a lot of pivoting that would have had to happen.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to me, and I think that it was... They wanted to make Ross climb over or something because they thought it would be funny, but to me, I think it was just stupid. I think there could have been a way better way to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big fan of this scene. I think the only reason they put him in there is to get the sweet and low packets rained down on him, which is not even that funny either.
They wanted That was supposed to be like sentimental.
It was going to fight about what
she
was going to wear.
I guess that makes it a little bit funnier.
Oh, that's more of a day shoe. Where she's going, she's going to need something fancy.
Right. Still no reason to have him climb over a dresser in a closet to figure out. This is the most impractical setup I've ever seen in my life. And it infuriates me every time I see that episode.
Yeah, I don't like that part either. So, fuck that part. Moving on. I do like the conversation that Jack and Monica are having, which Jack got out of helping somehow. And why Monica doesn't go help in the closet, I don't know, but Ross is helping them, and Jack and Monica are talking about his burial at sea plans.
Yes, what his plan is. When he goes, he wants to be buried at sea because he thinks it'll be exciting.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like I'm not the only person. How would you want to be buried, Brayden?
I think cremated, probably.
Cremated?
Yeah.
So would you want your ashes spread, or would you want to be on an urn on some furnace or mantle?
No, definitely
like
spread. I'm thinking like a mountain.
Mountain?
A mountain or like the ocean. I can see that. That's cool. Yeah. I think a mountain's more my style. Something like that.
Something
like that. I haven't thought it through. I really don't give a shit. I mean, you could throw me in the Tennessee River. It really doesn't matter.
What do you think, Leah?
I want to be cremated.
Cremated.
And what's done with the ashes, I think I would leave that up to my kids to decide.
What to do. You don't have a preference at all?
No, I think I'd want to leave something where they can kind of have some kind of control over it.
Mm. So you can get it put in a little necklace.
You can also get tattooed with it.
Mm.
See,
that's what I'm going to do with him when he dies.
See, oh God. See, oh, you're going to do that to me?
I'm joking. I'm
fine
dying
with that.
Before you.
So I think it's hard to decide this because I don't know how technology is going to change by the time I die. I'm very positive about how long I'm going to live. And so I think that by the time I die, it wouldn't be ridiculous for me to have my remains shot into space. Even if I have to be cremated, it would be cool to get sent to Mars. I think it would be super cool for some biological piece of me to get shot to Mars. I think Elon Musk would do that for me, or maybe Elon Musk Jr.
Or the dude that owns Virgin Records.
Yeah, well,
Richard maybe Branson's doing shit like that. He might shoot him up there for
you. Yeah, it would be a great scam. Make people pay to have their loved ones shot to Mars, yeah, and I would make my loved ones pay to have me shot up to Mars because that'd be cool, man.
They'll just like throw you in a warehouse somewhere. Like, yeah, we did it. That was him.
I'm just gonna break it to you now. If I'm alive when you die, it's not happening.
So that's awesome. Or my alternative is I'm somehow...
Key is a will. That way it has to be carried out.
I'm somehow mixed...
I will tear up.
No, so my alternative to space is to have my ashes mixed into like fertilizer or soil or something and then grow into a big tree. And I would only be allowed to be chopped down if I was to be printed on a best-selling book.
We said a little bit, Steven.
Somebody's thought about this a lot. Probably a little too much.
As a matter of fact, you know, I would like my ashes put on a dog's leash. And
I just think there's really great ways to go about it. If you're gonna, you only get to do it once, right? So, or somebody else has to do it for you once.
At the end of the day, I'm dead, so I don't really give two shits. I'm more inclined to either donate my body or have it cremated. Like, I think I would donate all my organs and then have my body cremated.
See, the thing is like, if you're too old, though, you probably can't.
You know, like, those...
If you die young, I would definitely be with you.
You can still study the brain, though.
Donate organs and stuff.
You know how
you definitely study the brain and how it, you know, dissipates.
They have those gag things you can buy for people, which are, like, sparkle bombs that you can send to people's houses, and it just blows up and glitter goes everywhere.
Okay.
You put me in one of those, and you send me to...
God damn it.
And you wonder why I question my decisions every day.
Just like, ha-ha!
I've never met someone that has so many post-mortem ideas.
Good luck getting me out of your curtains, and that'll be the note.
I like how you said it in the voice of the really high guy. So
anyway, moving on.
I concede the mountain thing because then you'll have to make a day of it. Like Jack says, if you scatter the ashes, you make a day of it. But he doesn't want to be cremated. No. He wants his fucking body thrown in the water. So it's just so funny. Yeah, just throw Jack's ass in the water. What are you going to wrap him up in a towel?
It'll get so nasty, man. Just and at what point... So how long does the body immediately sink? At some point, I feel like it would float.
You got to sink it.
And then maybe it would sink again.
It depends. Is he going in a casket? Are they throwing a whole casket with his body in the water?
That's a great point.
But it's definitely interesting. It's not predictable. I agree with what
Jack
says.
I want you to know I'm terrified of the ocean, and burying me at sea would be the worst way to deal with my afterlife.
I get seasick. I wouldn't like that. So moving on from that, it's a real funny line, but Jack just... has the great line of saying, buried at sea. Huh.
Huh.
That's how he wants people to think of
him. He never did anything interesting in his life.
And technically still wouldn't have, because other people would have buried him at sea, but still, I guess he asked for it.
So, cut back, they're still trying to find all the shit for Nana to be buried in. They get their shoes. So basically they find all the sweet and lows in the closet. That's a real touching moment for Ross. Then we move on to the funeral.
Which, I feel it's strange that all the friends got invited to the funeral.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. You don't normally invite your friends who don't know your grandparents to.
Yeah, that
funeral.
Was weird.
It seems odd.
But
they're
it had
most
to be done.
They're the most codependent group of friends in history. They're going to be there for every
That's
occasion.
True.
It's just strange. So I can't really blame Joey for trying to watch the Giants game during this.
He's not close.
Because it's not nice. It's mean to do that. But also, you have no idea who this person is. And you've obviously been dragged to this funeral.
Still disrespectful.
It's disrespectful, but you have zero emotional connection to this person. Right. So he is trying to listen to, or at least at this point, is the pregame.
Which is pretty dedicated.
The Giants. For the Giants-Cowboys game.
Now, TV.
I'll go ahead and throw this out here. I looked up. I know this isn't based in 100% reality, but I looked up if the Giants would have played the Cowboys at this time. And it's very plausible.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they play them twice a year.
They play them twice a year. If you go back and look at the scenes in Chandler's office in the break room, you can see on the whiteboard that it says... There is a retirement party for so-and-so on November 22nd. So we can assume it's close to November 22nd in this timeline, but it's not quite November 22nd.
Yeah, I think the air date is November 10th.
Right. So I looked at, in 94 at least, when they played each other, and the Giants did play the Cowboys November 7th, and it was a Monday night game, and it aired at 9 p.m. I don't remember the time zone for 9 p.m.,
probably Eastern, which would have been their time zone, but that doesn't fit because it's daytime, right?
Well, it's daytime, but he said he was watching the pregame. Mm. So it's entirely possible by the time it was at the, what do you call it when everyone's eating all the food, the recession? When they're there just kind of after everything settled, they're just kind of eating the food and hanging out is when they're watching the game, and it's very possible it's become nighttime by then. So it's still not, it's like they did pick a reasonable game from the pick out. Now the score is completely wrong based on what Joey says, but it's so if you go off real world timelines, you could maybe say that Nana's funeral was on November 7th if you want to go off the football game.
I like it. Rest in peace, Althea.
Althea. So, oh, I don't know why I didn't mention this earlier. Did anyone notice that the apartment is now apartment 20?
Oh, so this is when it changed.
I don't know if this is when it changed, but this is the first time I've noticed it's not a single-digit apartment.
Well, the one with the blackout, I'm pretty sure it was still the old numbers. Basically, they're walking away from the funeral, and then Ross falls in the fucking hole.
And I would imagine that falling into that at least 6-foot-deep grave, that would have hurt so bad. I think falling into that hole, I would have broke a hip. For sure. I'm like old enough now where I think I'm in hip-breaking territory.
You are pretty old now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to hurt.
But it gives us a great segue into why Ross has to be on a unhealthy amount of painkillers, probably.
It reminds me of much, much later of the one where Ross is fine and he's very drunk.
Yes.
The way he's acting. But he's like, I took two, and then I took two more.
The first two didn't work,
but the second two. And then you're right, because in that episode, he was like, that first batch of margarita was in, but this second batch is good.
Yeah.
He does a great job in this episode acting like he is very high off of these muscle pain pills. Right.
But it's really only used as a point to let him make that joke about Chandler being gay.
Yeah.
And then also to wander over and give him a way to tell Rachel that he loves her.
But she plays it as she doesn't actually understand what he's saying.
Exactly.
Because she's like, oh yeah, like I love you too, as in friend-wise is what she's thinking. And he's like, you don't get it.
That's the brilliance of the scene. He's like, oh, you don't get it. And he just gets mad.
And passes out.
But that whole passing out on her thing, like, I just don't even like that at all. Like, I get what they were trying to set up there, but I don't think it's that funny.
Yeah.
Like, him just laying there for, like, three scenes
on
top of her. It's like, okay, we get it.
But so. that segues into Monica's Judy digging into Monica again a little bit.
Mm.
I do like a little bit of that scene because it kind of also touches on how it's very taboo. Well, I don't know if taboo is the right word, but it's very normal for girls to grow up and be like their mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's portraying there.
Mm-hmm.
Judy had to deal with this her whole life, and now she did it to Monica because that's all she knew.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Like I touched on earlier, just it shows that vicious cycle, not just from mother to daughter, but just families in general.
I know you've said that Monica mostly focuses it on cleaning, but I would say that her craziness about everything being tidy is definitely rooted in the way that her mom treated her,
it
for sure.
Definitely is. I mean, I'm not saying that.
It's
just
not
saying
as bad.
It's rooted in it's one thing versus where Judy's criticizing everything that Monica does. Monica's not criticizing everything that everybody else does necessarily, but she does nag Chandler to clean.
Yeah.
Nag other people to clean.
She's very motherly in other aspects, though.
Yeah.
When you look at who's the mother of the group, it's obviously Monica. She takes care of everybody. She has that dynamic.
She cooks.
She cooks. I think that Monica uses cleaning as a coping mechanism with just being fucking throttled her whole life. This is one thing that she can control and perfect. And when it's clean, it's clean, right? When it's Monica clean, it's fucking clean. Right. Like, there's no saying that's not clean. So right. that's one thing she can control and perfect. Yeah. That's her escape.
Because even with her cooking, she can't even please her mom with that.
That Judy redeems herself a little bit when she compliments Monica's earrings, which Monica thinks were Judy's, but they actually turned out to be Nana's, which is a nice moment between them.
I did like that scene because it was right after that. It was during that conversation, and it almost seemed like Judy understood what Monica was saying a little bit, because she goes to kind of move her hair back around her ears, because that's her least attractive quality, right? And instead of doing that, she goes, oh, these are nice earrings. And I was like, that's really nice of Judy. That's the only time she'll ever be nice.
And that basically ties off the storyline, other than the fact of they're back at Central Perk looking through old pictures. And they discover that Nana had kind of a similar group of friends that hung out in a coffee shop together. And they looked similar, her and Monica did. And that's a nice moment as well.
Let's play Bamboozled!
Hey Siri, flip a coin.
Heads.
Heads.
There you go.
All right.
You going first?
I'm going first, right. Babe.
What was the name of the girl Ross told Chandler was gay in college? I need first and last.
What was the name of the girl or the guy?
What was the name of the girl Ross told that Chandler was gay?
Oh, that Ross told that Chandler was gay. Oh, I know it starts with an S, but I don't know anything other than that. I don't know.
Braden?
Damn. I remember this, but...
It wasn't like Sydney or Savannah, was it? I don't know.
You've already upped your turn.
Yeah.
Debbie?
No.
Is that your final answer?
I don't know.
It was Susan Salador.
How can it be Susan?
Susan Salador. All right, 0-0.
So
back to Steven.
Back to Steven. All right, so Phoebe's wearing a vest. What is the theme of the pictures on the vest?
What? Are you kidding
you
me?
You always kill us.
It was so
us.
Weird. I couldn't pass it up.
There was such a an theme?
Odd, yeah, there was like a theme on her vest, and it was so crazy. Well, it wasn't crazy, but it was very...
old people?
Brayden, would you like to try?
Oh, God.
Is it like women?
No. So it was science. She had like
a nucleus
kind of thing.
Neither one of us are going to get these questions right.
I hope they get easier.
All right.
They do. Well, maybe not.
I only watch this episode once.
We'll end this in a skunk for both of us. And,
all right.
And,
well,
and,
you know.
And Leah will be the bamboozle champion. Okay. So.
Back to Steven.
Yes. Sure. Why not?
So when Jack and Monica are talking about how he wants to be buried, there's a poster behind Jack. What does it say?
Fuck no that! I don't know that! What does it say, Brayden?
Bon voyage, I don't know.
Does it say, Ox butes chemin, jouets, objets pour tren et trenes?
That's our living room for one.
That was my best guess.
So it's a poster for the Bijou Theater.
Yeah.
Which I thought was weird. I looked that up. It's in like Tennessee.
It was this close. I was so close to having that. Yeah. All right. Start with Brayden.
0-0.
Brayden, who does Joey's coat sound like according to Chandler?
Joey's coat sounds like Brent Musburger.
Yes.
Why did I give that to you? I wouldn't have gotten it. No! Have you won one of these yet?
I don't think so.
I'm about to win one.
Notoriously terrible.
You definitely...
Brent Musburger?
You definitely took away one of my
questions. He's still active.
God dang it.
So, Steven, what is the score of the game?
Oh, I know this one. It's 16-13.
It is 17-14.
God dang it!
See,
oh my god!
I was gonna say 17-13.
No! I was one off on both!
Steven, you've been bamboozled.
I finally won one!
Oh my god! With what?
1-0.
1-0.
I was kind of afraid my questions weren't going to be good.
Those were some of the hardest questions I think I've ever had to answer.
Those were tough. Good job, Liam.
What was the poster behind Jack Geller? Get out of here.
Yeah, like, Raiden hasn't asked about posters before in the background.
I've already forgotten the name of the guy that you said.
Brett Musing?
Brett
Musburger.
God dang, I don't...
I had to look up how that spelled.
I've been watching football a long time.
I know.
Phoebe's vest just, like, super was crazy, so I had to, right. I had to have a question.
Thanks for joining us, guys. That concludes today's episode of Friends Like Us. Next episode, we'll be discussing the one where Underdog gets away, which is Season 1, Episode 9. Go out and watch this episode and join us back here. If you'd like to keep up with us, please follow us on Twitter at FriendsLikeUsP1, Instagram FriendsLUPodcast, and Facebook, The Friends Like Us Podcast. I'm Brayden, and on behalf of Leah and Steven, thank you. We'll see you guys next time.
Peace.
See ya, pals.